We got a little echo here. I'm getting feedback.
Oh, are you?
It's a little echo.
It sounds great to us, so I don't know how it's going to come out.
I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be all right. We're going to fade out the intro music right now, and we are at the newly constructed, just for us, Good Morning Gloucester Institute. Finally, we made it.
Big time. Big time.
Yeah. Finally made it. These are nice digs. Much better than the stinky office, I'd say.
Yeah.
I'll say.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, is this going to be the new GMGI headquarters?
Yeah, no, it's just the GMGI, Good Morning Gloucester Institute headquarters, Kim. Get with it. No, we're at the Gloucester Marine Genomics Institute, which we playfully refer to as the Good Morning Gloucester Institute. And Ashley DeStino is with us, hosting us. And we don't tell her this, but what we're really here to do is to get the schematics so we can get the seagull up on the sign next to the big GMGI symbol. We want to have that big seagull, the big Good Morning Gloucester logo right on the building so we can make it official, but don't tell her.
Somebody should Photoshop that in at least.
That would be a good idea. I like the way you're thinking. Ashley, thanks for having us.
I'm so glad you're here.
You gave us a tour. How long has the place been open?
So since we moved in mid-October and the ribbon cutting was at the end of October, so 2018.
And there's an event happening today. What's the event?
Yeah, so we're having our first community open house today. We've had some other groups come in, you know, schools and things like that, but this is the first time it's been open to the community.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's so
Four
exciting.
To six today.
Four
yeah.
to six? Oh,
yeah.
The light will be beautiful.
I know.
We took a tour, and it is, the whole building is first class. Wendover built it.
Wendover built it, yep.
We got a tour of the first and second floor. Now, you guys, GMGI, occupies part of the bottom floor.
We've got two-thirds of the bottom floor, yeah, about 6,000 square feet.
And the upstairs is vacant and up for rent.
Up for rent, yeah.
And it is, the views from both floors are outrageous.
Stunning.
Probably the best views on the waterfront.
We don't take them for granted, that's for sure.
No, and there's all, you know, obviously, thinkers were involved in the planning because it's all glass.
It's
wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet you don't have to pay much to heat this place because the radiant
sun pouring in.
Yeah, the sun pouring in is gorgeous. So, but this is a first class lab. All the equipment is incredible. You have genome sequencing machines that you were telling me years ago would cost tens of thousands of dollars to do and long periods of time that it can get it done for a fraction of that.
A fraction of the cost, yeah. And what one scientist told me one time that I think is a great way of putting it, basically these machines take a New York City phone book and they shred it up into a million pieces and then you put all of that back into this machine and then it spits out a perfectly good phone book back at you in, like you said, a very quick amount of time for a very reasonable amount of money.
Wow.
So it's very impressive.
To have that locally, so right now there's about 10 full-time employees?
Yeah, so we've got 10 people here at 417 Main, but we've got 13 on staff because there are three up at the Gloucester Biotechnology Academy, which is up at Blackburn. So we've got 13 staff total, but we're hoping by the year 2020 to have 20 people down here at the Institute.
How many students do you have?
Good question. So we've got 20 open spaces for 20 students. We're looking for students to fill our fourth class, which starts in September. So we've got 20 available spots.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let's go into that. Is it called the Academy? What's it called?
So Academy, affectionately known as the Academy, but Gloucester Biotechnology Academy is the real name.
Gloucester Marine Biotechnology Academy. So, and this would be for who?
So the Academy is for high school graduates. You don't have to have any science experience whatsoever, but it's for anybody that wants to get real hands-on learning at the bench to become an entry-level lab technician. So they spend 6 months at the lab up at, it's a new build-out facility up at Blackburn, and you spend 6 months in the lab learning biotechnology techniques, speaking to real scientists, doing these biotech methods, and then after that 6 months, you get invited on a paid internship at a local biotech company. So
as long as you don't screw up, you're kind of guaranteed
John Doyle, our education director, and all of the other staff do an amazing job finding placements for all of our students. So yeah, they're at places like Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, they're at Harvard, they're at the Broad Institute, they're at Cell Signaling, New England Biolab. So it's just an amazing like opportunity for these students.
So you don't have to have any college education to be a part of that?
No, none. So what we found is that it's lately what's been happening is it's these students who graduate high school and they may not have an idea of what they want to do next. So they think, you know, this is a great opportunity. It's such a short time commitment. Why not give it a try?
How long is the time commitment?
So it's 9 months total, 6 months in the lab and then a 3 month internship.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
This is, we've been beating that drum since John Bell came in the office and did the original interview. But God almighty.
Yeah, it gives such a great opportunity for kids, not even kids, they're adults, you have to be 18 to 26 is the age range.
18 to 26. Is there a tuition?
There is a tuition, yep. But there's pretty generous financial aid available for those who qualify and apply.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We are so lucky to have this place here.
Yeah. And then we're also, last summer we started our Fish Fraud Forensics Summer STEM program, which is for high school students to take a week, kind of condensed week-long course of this tech training program.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah.
Too.
And this summer we're offering it for middle school students as well.
So imagine this, you graduate high school, you're aimless, but you kind of why would you not do this?
Right.
This is a stepping stone for some. So do some kids go and take the academy 9 months and then go to college?
So we weren't expecting that to be an outcome, but we realized that happens more frequently than we thought. So we've had several students take the course, graduate, have their internship, but then say, "I love science. I want to know more. I'm going to go back to college and get my degree, and then further my education."
Oh, that is just that is.
Just to have it on your resume.
Yeah.
9 months at that age.
Yeah. You know. And we've even had some students in the academy who have gone to college already and graduated from a four-year degree, but then also take the course because what they find is that at the academy, they get so much more hands-on experience than they do at a four-year college. Because in college, you're getting a lot of lectures and listening to science, but at the academy, you're doing it with your own hands, you're doing it at the bench, so it's a very different experience.
It's all first class. Thanks for giving us that tour.
Yeah,
it is
so
amazing.
It would be nice to have, because I'm long past 26, it would be nice to have an adult continuing ed program.
Yeah, no, and that's something we've explored because now that we're here, because prior to October, our science staff was also sharing the academy research space because that was the only lab that we had. But now that we have this, all of our science staff is here doing the research here at 417 Maine. So the academy is fully dedicated to education now, which is great. So now we're looking for other ways to expand and thinking about ways we can just maximize, whether it's education for adults or more students for high school students or middle school students. So just trying to find ways that we can maximize.
So you had a bunch. So we in the lab.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people scurrying around.
Yeah.
What in particular are they doing right now?
It's always a mystery to me too. But yeah, they are working on several different projects. I think we've got 5 or 6 active research projects going on. So we're sequencing the genome of the lobster, sequencing the genome of the cod. We're studying eDNA, which is something that happens anywhere you go, but in the ocean, fish swim through the water and they leave traces of DNA. So you take a sample of the water and you can get a sense of what was there.
I think I read an article about that, but did Sean Horgan write an article about
that? He probably did. Yeah, he's been so great to us. We're taking samples from water all over the place and studying the DNA. So at any given moment, they could be running a sequence of a genome. They could be taking samples
and
analyzing. And sea urchins.
Studying sea urchins.
Yep.
Yeah, there's mini aquarium back there.
Awesome.
Really, it's beautiful. It's so clean. And with filters and everything like that.
Yeah.
They have all different kind of species in there.
Yeah.
Tell us what you told us about sea urchins. That
was
so interesting.
Our science director, Andrea Bodner, before she came to GMGI, spent a lot of years studying the sea urchin because sea urchins live for hundreds and hundreds of years without any signs of aging or cancer or anything like that. So we're working with the science staff to figure out why that is and what that can mean for humans and if we can figure out how sea urchins can do it, why can't we do it?
Yeah.
I guess the whole
idea behind the genome sequencing and stuff like that to find common threads where we might be able to use it in human applications.
Yeah, human applications, yeah.
I mean, I think they're just scratching the surface, and right here, you're at the forefront of it. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's currently 9 FDA-approved marine dry drugs on the market, and so the hope is that since there's, you know, that's a very small amount,
yeah.
So looking forward, I think that's the hope that we can add to that number.
You read a lot. Well, I pay attention because I'm in the fish business, but I read a lot about sharks. They think that there's something in sharks that can help fight cancer.
Really?
Yeah. I remember when we were handling dogfish, there was a talk of the, they don't have bones, they have cartilage, that the cartilage had some type of anti-cancer.
Interesting.
But they were drying and pulverizing the cartilage and using that in some type of medications.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting, though. I'm looking forward to speaking to one of your scientists
as well.
Yeah, one
of the scientists. I can go get him.
Fantastic. So Tim, do you consider yourself a scientist?
Yeah, I'm a fisheries research scientist here at JMGI.
Tim Sullivan. And how long have you been here? What was your background before being here?
So I did a master's at the University of Toledo where I studied population management units for the yellow perch fishery in the Great Lakes. And then I did my doctorate in Louisiana where I studied diseases in the blue crab fishery in the Northwest Gulf of Mexico. And then I came here to GMGI in May of last year.
So you're basically like a professional football player that just goes wherever
I followed the
You're all in. You're just up, and I'm like, this seems like a really interesting opportunity. I'm all in.
Yep. Yeah. That's what it is.
I'm like, you're not beholden to some small town. You're like, all in.
I follow the fish or the shellfish.
Yeah.
Wherever there's action, that's where I'm gonna go.
That's very exciting. No, it's interesting. So what were the particular reasons that what about the promise of GMGI said this, you know, I want to be involved there?
Yeah, so I've always been really interested in translating science to benefit fishermen. So that's always been my deal. I'm a fisherman myself. My father was, we did tons of recreational fishing. And GMGI's sort of mission to use genomics, which I think is an extremely powerful tool to benefit fishing industries and fishermen, that's really what I spent the last decade learning to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've always wanted to do. And this was sort of the perfect mix of what I wanted in my future career. So when I saw the job post, I was all about it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
If you notice, his shirt is fishing lures all over it.
Yep.
Oh, a fly fishing guy.
Yeah.
There you go, yeah. No, it's this place is very wild. So there's about 10 scientists back there?
Yeah, so the staff of about 10 researchers working on different projects. So there's a few that do the microbial work, and then myself and a few others are doing the sort of finfish, shellfish-focused research.
And so give me an example, like a real-world example that you could see starting here and, you know, something that average person on the street could relate to, like the benefit of the work that's going to be done.
Yeah, so I think one of the research projects we're doing right now is developing new ways to test for diseases. So there are a lot of folks in Massachusetts that grow things like shellfish that get diseases. We're focused right now on white shrimp, which are grown in the US and around the globe. And they get a lot of diseases that will kill a whole farm.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, when they test for disease, it involves sending a shrimp to a lab, and then someone in a lab uses special equipment, and then a few days later will give them results. What we're doing is developing a test, or sort of adapting a test that was developed at MIT, so it's a collaboration between GMGI and MIT, to create a test that can be done in 2 hours, doesn't require any equipment or special training, with the idea that being we can give farmers, aquaculturists, the ability to take that into their own hands, test their own supply, and have almost immediate understanding of what's the health of their
wow
stock that they're growing.
Yeah,
that's tremendous.
I know we used to have a closed lobster system. Mm-hmm. You know, thousands of pounds of lobsters in them. Main thing that would kill them would be pH levels.
Yeah,
you know, filters and there'd be too much waste that the lobsters would excrete, and the filters, the biofilters, and the bacteria weren't able to keep up with the breaking down of the bad ammonia that the lobsters would release into the tanks. Wow. So that was more of that wasn't such a DNA type of thing.
Yeah,
that was very educational, Joe. Very impressive.
There you go. See that?
Were you impressed, Mr. Scientist?
I had it. I followed it the whole way.
You used a lot of scientific terms in there.
Yeah. Was that really?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That's what
I'm
doing.
Very nice.
But so we had a blue lobster.
Yeah.
I ripped off one of the swimmerettes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I shouldn't say that. I don't know. We're going to get in trouble. No. And I threw the lobster back. So the lobster will live because they regenerate their parts.
Gotcha. Sure.
Because people will freak out if you get a blue lobster and you don't throw it back into the ocean. They have a heart attack thinking that the blue lobster is not back into captivity. I mean, into free-range lobsters, right? But did you guys get to do anything with the blue lobster?
So far, we have extracted the DNA from the lobster. Zach Dench, one of the GBA grads, extracted DNA from that blue lobster and another that another fisherman had collected and had given to us. And we are getting ready to either sequence it here, or we also, we've been talking with one of the researchers at the sequencing facility at Dana-Farber who may sequence it on one of their very large machines.
Is that Paul Morrison?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's a good one in Gloucester contributor.
Yeah, so yeah. They might have it there on one of their new sequencers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's sequencing mean?
So when sequencing itself is when you take the DNA of an organism and then you...
It's like a map, right?
Yeah, you basically...
It's like all the X's and Y's, you know.
Yeah,
the
computer will read all of the bases and give you back information on all of the genetic material that organism contains. So you can basically read it like sort of like a book.
Okay. So, like, every organism has its own DNA.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's basically...
code.
Code, yeah.
The code that...
And, you know, like, you know, obviously, like, the further, like, a person and a snail has vastly different DNA, but there's still some that correlate, right? Or not?
Yeah, I mean, well, they use the same building blocks.
They use the same building blocks, right. So...
So we're close to some species that you wouldn't even think, right? Like, I think I've read something about that, right?
You wouldn't think what?
Yeah, that we are close to, like, some...
our DNA?
Yeah, we have... Oh. Our DNA is similar to some, you know, like...
Other, like primates?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Well, you would think, right? Like an ape.
No, but not primates. Other creatures as well.
Like piping plovers.
So, yeah. A lot of the same genes are found in multiple organisms. That's what sometimes in biomedical they use, like fruit flies or zebrafish, to understand how specific proteins work. That's because the same proteins, similar proteins,
similar
are found
proteins
in humans.
Yeah.
So here's a question. You got the two. Did you get a... Was one of the lobsters a male and one a female?
I'm not... So the one we got from the other fisherman was definitely a female. I'm not sure. I think we have the information that you gave us.
I must have taken that down.
I don't have it off the top
of
my head.
Yours is by.
Do you think that there's a possibility within our lifetime that if you had a male and a female blue lobster, that you could produce... You could produce blue lobsters?
So... That would be a large undertaking. One of the things that GMGI is doing right now is sequencing the genome of like a normal American lobster. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the first place. So you need to have the genome assembled so that you know where everything is and what all
the base one.
Yeah.
So you can see what the difference is, and then when you extract the difference,
then you can identify what are the characteristics that cause a blue lobster, which is really a big step on the way to understanding how that happens. Because it happens in not just lobsters. There are crayfish that are blue, just like the lobsters can be blue.
Joe's willing to fund that research. Joe, you have your checkbook today?
No. I don't know. I have enough zeros at the end of it to make it happen. Yeah, but this these are the types. So now in the medical field, so we were just talking about how the urchins have potentially can live for hundreds and hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. How do you extract information about that they can use in real world drugs? Like, is that something that?
Yeah. So, I think Andrea could probably tell you more about it. But when she compares urchins that live for three or four or 5 years, to ones that live 200 years. Like I said before, they have very similar proteins, like, you know, they have all of the same ones. They're understanding those differences and how they contribute to longevity. And like how does a particular change in the way the protein is formed or the units that make it up, how does that give anti-cancer properties, that kind of thing, then that can translate to some sort of research application for humans.
Yeah.
Well, and then you get the drinkers and smokers, and then the non-drinkers and smokers, sea urchins, that impact at all.
Oh my goodness. So
I'm a scientist myself.
Yeah.
Even though.
Yeah, he's a scientist, all right. So here's a question. Do you work with any of the academy kids?
So right now I work closely with Zach Dench. He's a graduate.
Tim mentioned was in the second class of the academy and graduated, and we hired him. Huh? And then the first valedictorian is now teaching, a teacher at the academy.
Wow.
So we've had two grads that have been hired by GMGI. But in terms of like academy current students, Tim doesn't have much interaction.
So yes. What advice would you give it seems to me that there's a lot of kids, right, that they grow up in Gloucester or maybe they don't even grow up in Gloucester, but there's a romantic notion of being a marine biologist, mm-hmm. right? You know,
yeah.
I think that they see pictures of people down on the Cape wearing like, you know, khaki shorts and, you know, going out on sailboats and collecting samples, and they think that it's all, you know, field work, having, yeah. you know, out in the sun. What advice would you give? But I feel like this field, this genome, you know, marine genomics, mm-hmm. is next, because I always try to impress upon my daughters that when you go to school, I'm going to sound like a broken record, we've heard this speech a million times, but you haven't, that when you graduate, try to get something that when you graduate, there is a huge demand for your thing, so you can get paid.
Yep.
As opposed to being graduate from with a photographer, you know what I mean, or a art degree.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a million art degree people coming out, and then, you know, there's hardly any jobs for them. Like, do you feel like there's great opportunity for kids that, and what would be the path that they would take from high school and say that they joined, that they came to the academy to maximize their career if they've chose this path? What would you say to them? What would be the path for them?
So, I mean, as far as...
Are there good jobs?
I mean, yes, there are good jobs in genomics, especially. I mean, it's a burgeoning field. It's growing every year. There's new technological developments all the time. Always new things to learn, which is one of the reasons I like it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would tell them is, you should be open to new experiences. Because that's one of the things I've always tried to do, and I bounced around so much because I wanted to experience research in different places and have different personal experiences, but also professional experiences. And that's important for those academy graduates as well, that when they start at a new job, that's an opportunity to learn new things. And that's sort of just the beginning.
Yeah, that's not the end all.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be the end all. Be all. You should open.
Should always try to improve.
Yeah.
Learn new things. Be constantly trying to improve yourself. That's really the way that you can have a long-standing career and make a difference. That's what I say.
So to help bring this to life, for me. Can you give like an example or two of how what you're doing or what this overall field is doing and what impact it's had on us as humans or the marine field? To say, wow, you know, what you guys are doing or what other companies are doing, here's the result. Here's one of the examples.
They may be building towards results.
Right, no, maybe then that's, maybe I'm asking a wrong question, but I'm just curious, you know, what is the end result? And has there been any examples of results?
Right now we're sort of working towards end results. I talked a little bit about the disease tests. We haven't gotten them all the way out to the farmers to test yet, but that's one of those things.
What is it?
So one of the projects we have right now is to develop new ways to test for marine diseases that occur in the wild, but also cause issues for aquaculture.
Okay.
Both like shellfish growing or indoor aquaculture facilities.
Okay.
Right now they have
that could spread and wipe out
They'll kill the whole farm.
And if you have an indoor facility that's got, you know, I don't know, 20,000 pounds of shrimp alive, and something spreads through that thing and wipes it out, all this work that you've put in this investment is cooked.
And the diseases will go from like the start of the disease to killing shrimp in 7 days.
Okay.
Right now, they take a shrimp, they send it to a lab, and they'll get results back in 3 to 7 days.
Yeah.
But by then, they can do really nothing.
Yeah.
Everything's infected already, so you just basically flush the tanks, bleach everything, and start over.
So with that example, are you thinking
it would be something
you put in the water?
No, so what we're doing is developing a way that farmers can test for diseases themselves. So a molecular test that's simple enough, doesn't require any equipment, that runs in 2 hours instead of 6 days, where they can just test some water from their tank and say, my tank is clean, I don't need to worry about it, or I might have the presence of this virus, I should stop recirculating the water, think about culling the shrimp now before they're showing any gross signs of disease, and avoid losing all of the stock that I have and all the monetary potential that my farm.
So can I bring my fish tank here, get the water tested?
Yeah, well, the idea would be to provide them a way, like they would have like tubes that they would, you know, put some water in and test it and get the result themselves.
That's
that way they don't, that way they have the power to control their own destiny.
That's cool.
Tim, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate the information.
Yeah,
and
I appreciate you guys coming out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more about the blue lobster.
Well, hopefully once we get the results back, we'll do this again and we'll give you a breakdown.
Oh, wow, that would be
anytime.
Great.
You just, Ashley, you tell Ashley, Ashley will reach out to me and we'll make that happen.
More importantly, do you wear white jackets here?
Yeah, I do. I have it in the lab. Yeah, my lab coat says Timothy on it, real professional.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a real deal.
That's a dream of mine.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, it's a pleasure meeting you all.
Well, that was great. Nice of Ashley and Tim to take time out of their busy schedules here at GMGI, Good Morning Gloucester Institute, to talk with us. Today is, Chris brought up, is National Save a Straw Day.
Yes.
So by the time you listen to this, it'll be too late for you to make any type of impact, but we wanted you to know that
it was
Save a Straw Day.
So what does that mean, Save a Straw Day?
I got a text from my son this morning. Randomly, he shared the fact that it's National Save a Straw Day.
So basically what it's saying is, you know, this whole thing, like what everybody's talking about is, forego the, if you get a coffee, at a iced coffee, forego the straw.
I didn't know if it was like a counter movement to save straws.
But the good news is that
I
saw breaking news that it's been extended one more day.
So tomorrow,
for those people who are
all
listening
in
tonight, if you would like to participate in this very important day in our history,
you know what's kind of funny about the straw, the anti-straw people around here? They always bring up the turtles.
Yeah.
But we don't have any fucking turtles around here.
Because
I feel like they just regurgitate the information from the down in Florida, you know what I mean?
No, we do have turtles around here. We do have turtles.
The lobsters.
It's
the lobsters.
Sea turtles. There's no sea turtles.
Yeah, we do have sea turtles out here. We do have some sea turtles. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin, your job is to find a picture.
Yeah,
I want to find a sea turtle.
Show me a picture of a sea turtle.
Tell me about the sea turtle.
A Gloucester sea turtle.
Especially over Nanisquam, like in that the Nanisquam River area there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? Back to straws quickly. I've used a couple paper straws. It's a completely different experience.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
I can't do it.
I like
so.
Them.
I can't do it. And the metal ones, oh,
I don't like the metal
not
ones.
Good, not good.
Like
no,
so
no, not
I'm
good.
Sorry, folks who are honoring
get better,
today's national holiday.
Get better paper straws.
Betters?
Yeah, better paper straws.
Oh, better paper
they
straws.
Better paper straws.
Good
there's some
better quality
better
ones,
quality.
You say.
There's but, some that are really
yeah, I don't like rough. It when they get soggy either.
Yeah.
You just got to drink faster.
Maybe this BioLab here can help develop a straw that works better
maybe.
On my palate.
Yeah, you never know. That would be see. That would be doing God's work.
Yeah,
have you heard?
See, that's the stuff I thought they were doing. There.
You know the ring. Have you heard about the rings that are on six packs of beers?
Yes.
That
yes.
They're now made with turtle food, basically. So they degrade into food that turtles.
Yeah. They, so they're making these rings out of turtle food, and the cost of the six pack went
yeah.
for $4.50
yeah.
to $27.50
so
for
pay.
A six
no,
pack
I
of beer.
I gotta say one free.
It's wonderful.
No, it
that's wonderful.
No, it probably only adds a few cents.
And by the way, turtle soup is outstanding.
I love turtle
I
soup.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And the first time turtle I had soup. Turtle soup was the Cayman Islands. Was it Cayman? Yeah, I think it's one of the islands actually has a turtle farm.
I sure it wasn't
yeah.
the dry tortugas?
I don't know. Actually, Jenna is there now. I
yeah,
saw her picture.
Yeah.
She was at the turtle farm with
doesn't
her
it taste
two
like
children.
Chicken? Does turtle
yeah,
taste like chicken?
Yeah, tastes like chicken. But
like chicken.
The
that's
funniest thing, no lie, is you go through this turtle farm, and at the end, they have a snack bar selling turtles, like turtle soup.
I love
and like,
it. I love it. It's awesome.
No, I would think it would taste like crocodile or alligator does.
Yes,
very,
no,
it's
yeah, similar texture.
Similar texture.
I had alligator in Naples with my daughters, and it was battered and fried. And
oh, yeah.
If you would have told me it was chicken, I wouldn't have known
yeah.
it. Different.
Yeah,
honestly,
yeah,
I
probably
would. I wouldn't have known it. It might have been chicken. They charged us like an extra
yeah.
four, two or three times time more.
Yeah.
Ron Gilson is. I didn't do introductions, which I'm sorry about. Kim Smith is with us.
Morning, Gloucester.
Ron Gilson's
yeah.
with us.
Yeah.
And Chris McCarthy's with us.
Hey, Joe, happy birthday, man. Good
happy birthday.
It's been a while.
Happy birthday.
Is your birthday, Chris?
Joe's.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
She's not just 2 weeks away from you, Joe.
There you
oh.
go. See that? Ron had a very special, he was very secretive about this.
Really?
But he had this tribute to Joe Mondello, who, how old is Joe?
Joe's 93
year old World War II vet.
Yeah.
The world's greatest generation, which Ron is a part of.
Wow.
That's as what it's I mean wildly accepted as the greatest generation.
Yes, yes.
When men were men.
Men were men.
Yeah.
And straws were straws.
And straws were straws. Yeah. Did they have plastic straws back then?
Yes.
They did?
Yes. Now listen, Joe Mondello told me yesterday that his ship was just ahead of the Indianapolis that got sunk in the South Pacific, okay? Japanese sub sank the thing, and it's a tremendous story of all these seamen in the water for days being eaten by sharks and so forth.
Yeah.
His ship was just ahead of the Indianapolis. What a story.
Could have been him.
What's that?
It could have been him. It could
yes,
have been his ship.
It could have been him. Yes, it could have been him. But you know, as I sit here, and we all took this tour through this beautiful building, I think back over a lifetime, and that's a long time. As a young kid, I played right here at this, not at this wharf, but right on this waterfront. And when I look back and think of what was here, and what is now here, 8 years later, this unbelievable.
It's a derelict stuff. Piece of property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember a ravine, a deep cut down to get down to the waterfront. Now you just drive right in off the street.
They let them fill it in.
Yeah.
Do you notice that? I thought it was a. And did you see the foundation that they put in?
Unbelievable.
They built the foundation. What?
Where is this?
The building that we're in, Chris.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Pay attention. So when this was a fish company, you pulled into this space, and you went down. I used to have nightmares when we used to sell them shrimp here. This used to be a shrimp processing place. And I used to have nightmares pulling down with pallets of totes of shrimp on the truck because pulling down that kind of a grade.
Yeah.
I mean, one out of three trips over here, the stuff was all over the back of the truck. Because if you touch the brakes just a little bit, that shit's going flying.
Yeah.
Right? And when they started developing this property, I'm looking over there, I'm like,
how's that gonna happen?
I'm like, what? They must have filled an unbelievable amount of fill right here. Mm-hmm. And then, on top of that, when the foundation went in, it looked like they put a 10-foot foundation out of the ground on top of where the level was.
Yeah.
So, in my head, what was going through my head was like, if they let them do that here, they ought to let other people, because when people want to do something, that's one of the first things they always bust their chops about is, oh, that's, tidelands or something like that. You shouldn't be able to fill there. But somehow or other, they got along just fine here, which, God bless them. This is an incredible facility doing great work.
Yeah.
You know?
Unbelievable.
And so it's a nice flat parking lot. Yeah. You pull right in, you go up like a couple steps, and you're in the building. It's gorgeous.
Now, the only two landmarks that are here that I recognize from my youth is the lawnmower shop across the street, the sharpening place for whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And they sell gold and do a lot of things. In my day, that was Nick's Lunch. Can you imagine Mr. and Mrs. Nickus, immigrants, brought up a family of three kids over there, educated two of them in college on 10-cent hamburgers. 10-cent hamburgers, Kimmy.
Wow.
And
amazing.
10-cent hot dogs, 2 for $15 on a steamed roll. Well, that landmark is still there.
Yeah.
And across the street was Burnham and Thomas Tidal gas station. And in back, Joey, pardon me, there's a lot of lobster wharfs in the back. It's kind of a tough time. And the property was really, you're talking about shrimp that came after that.
Yeah.
As old as I am, I go way back.
Right. Yeah, I'm talking about 70s and 80s.
All through
And he's talking about 50s and 40s.
All through those decades, this was kind of like a quagmire down here, but now it's
now
beautiful.
Look at
building.
It.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
So you're talking about the place where the guy does the lawnmower repair?
Yes.
Yeah, snowblowers.
That was Nick's Lunch.
That was Nick's market, and then he moved up.
No. Nick's Lunch. Nick was a brother to the guy that was Nickus up on the corner.
Oh, he was the brother to that guy.
Brother.
Okay. Yeah. Where Sunbank is now.
Oh, Andy Nickus, that was a city councilor years ago. He's retired now, executive of Gorton's, and his brother Stevie, and they had a daughter, the last child, Stella, and she became a nurse. Andy went back. Went to Norwich University, and Stevie went right out of high school, went to work for a telephone company. But my mother and father worked in there, in that little place. It was four seats at the bar and one booth, and they sold 10-cent hamburgers. Can you believe it? And they educated.
Probably right around the same time that Woodman's was going, and and the village.
Yeah, well, the village came in 1951, but the year I graduated from high school. But
Woodman's
was there before.
In fact,
the gal that worked at the village worked for her cousin, I believe, Woodman, at Woodman's, and learned how to fry clams, and then they went to the village, and from there they went over to the Millstone Restaurant in Ipswich, which was, in this 70s and 80s, very popular.
The Millstone restaurant was in Ipswich?
Yes, the Millstone restaurant was in Ipswich, and that was David Doan and his wife Rosalind, and Rosalind was a cousin to Chubby Woodman, and she learned
what a name,
Chubby Woodman is wildly credited as the founder, the inventor of the fried clam.
Yeah.
What was the ice cream place on the way to North Gloucester? Wasn't that the Millstone Ice Cream Place? What was
the
that?
What?
Wasn't there an ice cream place,
yes,
called the Millstone?
No. Chanticleers.
You know where I'm talking about?
Yes.
Where the Richdale is now.
Well, I think there was a big Chanticleers ice cream place where Scalafani's Bakery is now.
No. You're talking about Cheremy's over there. That was an ice cream place. But what I'm talking about is going to North Gloucester on Washington Street.
Yes.
You know where the Richdale is, where the Mill River is?
Yes.
Wasn't there a mill? What was that? Remember there was a, wasn't there an ice cream place right behind where Captain Hook's is? In that?
Well, it could well have been, yes. Okay. A dairy freeze place in there, probably.
Yeah, but...
But what year, what decade was that?
70s.
In the 70s. I was there in the 70s, in Ward 4. Yeah, there was an ice cream. It was an ice cream. That's kind of
the only reason I remember that is because after, like, you know, Little League and stuff like that.
Yes.
You know, that was one of the places, yeah, that you would go in the summer, and they'd have like chairs out in the back there overlooking the Mill River. You know?
Isn't there still an ice cream place there now?
I don't know. Is there?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Were there any strip joints back then, Ron?
What's that?
Any strip joints?
Strip joints.
Any gentlemen's clubs?
No,
only on Maplewood Ave, the Rendezvous. Right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That was in the 80s, though. But, there was one in the 80s.
I got to tell you this little story. Mayor Toby appointed me to the licensing board. And, you know, that's kind of at the time, it was kind of a prestigious board. You were kind of bossy over all these.
A lot of ego involved there. Yeah, you could impose your will. Make people kiss the ring. Did you make people kiss the ring?
No.
No?
So anyway, we had on the board two women, ladies, that were lawyers. And I'm, at the time I was serving as chairman, and Doc Enos was the reporter in the audience taking notes for the Times. And one of the girls, ladies, said, well, St. Peter's Fiesta is coming up, and, you know, I just dread it. Well, I turned to the girl and I said, really, what's so terrible about St.? Well, she says, in our business, in the licensing board, all those drunks down there and all those bar rooms that are all, I said, what do you mean by that? She says, well, old timers, we have Mitch's and the St. Peter's Club. Yes, and are they troublesome? Well, look at all the problems. I said, well, at the risk of sounding old, back in my day, there was a barroom on every corner, and this was a wide open town. And you talk about those kinds of places, all the places.
It's ill repute.
Wasn't
the Fitzhugh Lane house a whorehouse?
Well, the Fitzhugh Lane house.
You're laughing, Chris.
The Fitzhugh Lane house, yes, but a better one was down on the street across from the building center, which is now the lawn of the Fitzhugh Lane house. And that was Arthur Suki Sawyer's house and a few more tenements all along there that were all torn down in the urban renewal area. In fact, the only thing that's left is that jewelry shop that we were at last Saturday. So, yes, and we had bar rooms everywhere, and you had no problem, and they were falling in the gutters and so forth. I'll tell you one other story. We had as a clerk of courts Mike Armstrong. Armstrong was the clerk of courts, and you know, he liked the grape, and he would be at the Elks Club on Pleasant Street, and he would go in there about 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and about 11 o'clock at night, the bartender would call the local police department, and they'd come and take Mike home because he could hardly stand up. But that was our law enforcement at the time. But we had a lot of a lot of bar rooms and a lot of things around here.
When was that? What decade?
But I said to this young lady on the board, I says, you know, we're really camping out today compared to what it was years ago. When your grandfather was around, by the way.
Yes.
Nothing to do with your grandfather, but just
so
saying.
Are we talking about the
30s
and
40s? Yes, 30s and 40s. Yes.
Yeah.
The heyday.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, there's a lot of seamen.
When the Empire Fish Company was a dance hall. Yes.
So can people listen and see and hear all these stories on your website?
Have I what?
Can people listen to your stories and on your website?
I tried to get to my friend Joey, and you know, you guys are all in the electronic age and the device age. I have a lot of devices in my house. I just don't know how to operate. I have a cell phone, I have an iPad, I have a laptop, and my wife has a, and you know, it's kind of troublesome. So please don't ask me too many questions about devices.
He has YouTube videos.
I have YouTube videos.
We've hosted them in the past.
Right. And you have a website, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a website, and I have no more.
Yeah. Right. So he has an, yes, it's, the website is thegloucesterilove-2.blogspot.com.
Right, and you can, there's lots of stories, right? Lots of stories.
Oh, yeah.
On your website.
What that is it's kind of like a collection of trivia, if you will, but appropriate for, you know, my lifetime. The reason for that is that my home is filled full of memorabilia, pictures, and so forth.
He lived on the back shore, he had a garage. I lived right next to him.
Yeah.
And, well, actually, you bought the unit, though. I had moved out. We lived there at different times, but we had this garage. He had this garage on the bottom floor. The entire garage was covered with old photos and stuff. It was like a museum.
Right.
It was like a museum of Gloucester artifacts from the heyday.
We're long removed
from the heyday.
Do you have all those photos?
Kimmy, now that you mention it, you're invited. I'd like to have you come to my house sometime. And that garage that Joey talks about, all the contents of that garage are now in my bedroom and in my garage also. So it's kind of like a visual, you know, wow. 80 years.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
It's that the Gloucester I Love .2-2, that's the contents of that garage with comments.
It's a good thing the Cape Ann Museum is building that building. Because when Ron's not with us, all that stuff can go into it. Because you know that they're expanding the Cape Ann Museum
to
putting a place where they can hold artifacts and stuff?
Yeah.
It's a good thing, is that.
So, you know, it's an for me, it's an interesting thing. The thing that interests me most is when I leave the picture, what's left behind, if somebody's interested, they have access to it. And, you know, I don't want to hide it under a bushel.
Yeah. Have you written down the dates on the back?
He's an incredible memory.
Yeah,
that's why I say he's...
Right.
So,
that's cool.
That's why I always refer to Ron as Gloucester's true historian. Because he really was... He wasn't born in Brookline.
Right.
He was born here.
Yeah.
And up the street, he went fishing.
Right, he worked on the waterfront.
He worked on the waterfront. He insured these boats. He knows real stories and real dates. When he tells the stories, they're not romanticized, fictional stories of what people wanted to hear that the waterfront was like. He tells stories, and
real.
When you read his book, An Island No More, that's still available at the bookstore in Gloucester, right?
Yeah.
Great read. You read it, right?
Yeah. Well,
it's still selling.
Halfway.
Huh?
Halfway.
He's halfway through it.
But when you read
his book,
it's
like you're walking down the streets, you're smelling the smells, and you're hearing the sounds. It's fantastic. It's a great read. I highly recommend you buy the book down at the bookstore of Gloucester.
I agree.
Thanks, Ron, for that.
So anyway, I just want to say, Joey, that anything that I have, I want Good Morning Gloucester to have. It's not a question of hiding or being secretive. It's a question of disseminating and getting the word, getting the history out. And since Good Morning Gloucester has such longevity...
11 and a half years now. 11 and a half.
How many years?
11 in a couple months.
Okay, 11 in a couple months.
But well, especially with Ralph and I joining.
It's immediate access.
Now it has true longevity.
It's immediate access to all kinds of material for the community.
Well, anybody can go. So if people don't realize already, you can go to Good Morning Gloucester and there's a search box. You can type in Ron Gilson search and there's pages and pages and pages of Ron's previous...
And in fact, I got to just add this one thing. I happened to do that the other night by accident.
Yeah.
And
that's what they all say when they're searching for themselves.
By accident.
You're very truthful, man.
And up pops Joey, and we're right here at the cruise port.
Oh, from one of the cruise ships coming. One of the first cruise ships coming in.
Yes.
Yeah, you were part of the welcoming committee, and I'm interviewing you.
And he was interviewing me, and he did a. He always does a great job, but came out looking pretty good. So
did he have hair? Did he have hair back?
More than I have now, for sure.
Yeah. We have a saying in the Marine Corps. You can't always shine, whatever, but Joey can do it. Anyway.
Well, thank you, Ron. Thanks for all the information. Check out Ron's blog, thegloucesterilove-2.blogspot.com, and we'll link to it in the show notes of the podcast. Thank you for that. Kim, soon, 1 p.m. Saturday, people will be officially able to purchase alcohol that is not purchased at a restaurant in Rockport.
Oh, yeah.
At the Whistle Stop Market. And it's beer and wine. That's what they're
doing. Beer and wine. Oh, so not hard booze.
Not
beer and wine.
One step at a time, Joe.
I wonder, you know how at restaurants they have beer and wine licenses, but they have like grappa and they have like...
a certain sugar content. Yeah. If something like Kahlua... Restaurants who have beer and wine license only
can hold or serve
Kahlua, Zambuca, stuff with very high sugar content.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if it's just beer and wine or what they're going to do. But that's fantastic news for them.
Great for the Rockford community.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's a baby harp seal that was rescued and relocated recently.
And I gotta go get it now. I gotta go find it.
I'll see you tonight.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks,
good
brother.
To see everybody. Ron, a pleasure as
good
always.
Good to see you.
Yes, good to see you. Always, exactly.
And I like your haircut.
Yeah, thanks, man. High and tight.
Did you get a picture?
I did.
Okay, good. Thanks, brother.
All right.
We'll talk to you later.
Happy birthday.
Are you okay?
Joe.
Gotta
buy them two doors.
Harp seal. Tell me about the harp seal.
Rubber.
The harp seal.
With maintenance.
Get them out of here. Yeah. Give them the hook.
This is banging.
Yeah.
Ron, you have your tool.
Yeah.
Tool belt.
Yes, I'll talk.
Joe, see you, man.
He's coming back at least one or two more times. My back is to him right now. Just wait for him to interrupt us again. One, two, three. No?
Yeah, he's waiting.
He's waiting to torture me?
He's waiting for you.
He's waiting to torture me. All right, there he goes. Tell me about the harp seal.
The harp seal.
Which is, so we always post pictures of seals on the blog, Donna and Kim particularly, and sometimes Pat. But most of the time, the photos that you're seeing are of harbor seals, which are the ones, if you see a seal around town, more times than not, it's a harbor seal. But the harp seals are something special, according to Kim.
Yeah, so we...
Less prevalent.
They're less spotted around here, but they do haul out, I think, more than the harbor seals, because they're very young. They probably are less than a year old. And so, and they stay with their moms for like 3 to 4 weeks, and then I think they're on their own after that. So this year it seems like we've had a lot of harp seals, and one came ashore in Lanesville and just hung out in somebody's driveway for a couple days. And then, but then they needed to deliver some lumber there, so they had to actually move it after 2 days. Wow. So the wonderful folks at the Seacoast Science Center Marine Mammal Rescue people And they're located in Rye, New Hampshire. You can call them just SSC Marine Mammal Rescue. But they came all the way down and they relocated the young seal.
Nice.
It was a juvenile seal. So typically what you see at Brace Cove is harp seals, but like a couple weeks ago we had a harp seal. Typically you see harbor seals, but a couple weeks ago I posted some pictures of a baby harp seal that was on Good Harbor Beach. So I don't know if you saw those or not.
Yeah, no, and you can tell the harp seals, they're spotted, right?
Well,
are they more brownish and spotted or tan?
Harbor seals do have spots, but you can tell the harp seals because the shape of their face is a little bit different, and because their spots are like really far apart when they're young. But then each year when they molt, their spots sort of come together, and then they turn sort of gray, and then they have a big saddle on the back. So in the old days, they were also called saddleback seals.
Cool.
Yeah.
Was there a red-tailed hawk in your?
Yes, there was.
What was he doing?
My husband was taking cell phone photos of it. I mean, great that he did that, but I wasn't there when it happened. But he watched it. Go through the garden with a squirrel dangling from its mouth,
wow,
looking for a good place to eat it. And then we have this beautiful outside shower with lattice on top of it, and he ended
privacy,
up...
Privacy, sofa privacy.
Yes, yeah, and he ended up eating the squirrel on top of the lattice shower.
God, so. Nature, that's nature.
I like the little squirrels that come to our yard.
They can be amusing.
Yeah, they're cute. So, anyways,
that's wonderful.
It seems like the red-tailed hawks are less shy. The juvenile ones are less shy than the adults. They let you get a little bit closer.
There is Nature's Nation, America Art and Environment.
A beautiful exhibit. I was coming back from Boston yesterday, so I only had a few minutes to spend at the exhibit, but it's just stunning. Beautiful.
And where is it?
It's at the Peabody Essex Museum.
Okay.
And it's just a, it's beautiful iconic paintings, but they're of landscapes over the years, but they're juxtaposed with contemporary Native American art, and then just very compelling examples of like a painting from the 1800s, what it looked like a painter is showing his display of all these dead birds hanging up, right? Like, because that was the thing back then. I mean, birds were, so many beautiful birds were hunted to extinction for their feathers and for specimens. And but then you see how the Native Americans would represent animals, and it was more fluid and more part of their life, as opposed to this very, you know, static display of let's dominate over the animals and kill them all. So, anyways, it's a lot of food for thought there at the exhibit, and I would definitely recommend. I hope to get back there when I have a little more time. It's through May 5th. There you go.
Through May 5th. Well, we're right at an hour. Thank you guys for coming in. Thank you for your stories, Ryan. I love you. The people can't get enough of your stories. They're fantastic. And
they're old stories, Joe.
Yeah,
well, it was nice. You put that tribute to Joe Mondello together, and a lot of people were talking about how wonderful that was. So kudos to you, and thanks for everything you do. Kim, thank you for your stories. They were interesting. And thank you to the Good Morning Gloucester Institute for hosting us here. And Ashley DeStino and Tim Sullivan. They were fantastic. So everybody have a great day.
Thank you.